set. We had done one cassette before this, sides A and B, and this is side A of the second cassette. The question was, how did CG hear about the collection, the Pope collection? His dealer in London told CG, probably by cable, which is what you did in those days, that there was an auction. And the way I heard the story from Dad is he authorized, and maybe there was an estimate in the dealer's cable. There almost always is. You know, estimate this collection might go for so many pounds. And Dad authorized the dealer to bid up to X, whatever that was. And by George, he got it. And it apparently was quite close. And he felt very lucky about it because the war being on and so much other more important news, the scientific community of Great Britain was probably hardly aware of even Pope's death, far less the collection, far less the auction.
Sure.
So, as Dad sort of said with pride, the Yankees did it again. They stole in at night and took this collection out from under the night, because I'm absolutely certain that the scientific societies of Great Britain would have made some kind of a move to stop that and set up some kind of a collection and museum or whatever.
Sure.
But they didn't, and he was smart to grab it when he did, and he got it, and he got it on the bid, and you know, he could have been the underbidder, and he wasn't. And in those days, who knows? You send a cable over, it was in a couple of days, and you get it back. It isn't like these telephone bids at Sotheby's, and you get somebody
by
on the phone,
moment.
And you get the collection, you get somebody in Australia, and he says, I'll go another 10,000, and he goes like this, and it's another, you know, they don't do that those days.
Right.
And I have a copy here of a priceless cablegram from Andrew Carnegie when he paid the money to build an extension on his famous building, which will be in this afternoon. Contains a museum of natural history, a music hall, a lecture hall, and Canadian Museum of Art, all in one building. It all grew out of the library, which is the original. And there's a beautiful hall of architecture, which has plaster casts, which went out of favor and come back now, and we have some magnificent plaster casts. And right next to it is a hall of sculpture. The sculpture surrounded, it's a copy of the Parthenon on a smaller scale. It's a really fascinating building, a room. The balcony around, the way the Parthenon originally did. And, of course, and many statues. And the question was whether, by the architect, whether the statues should be closed or not. And knowing Carnegie, he was wise enough to ask. Because Carnegie could be very generous, but he could also be very opinionated. So Carnegie sent back a telegram that said, regarding cablegram, recommend statues be clothed, as indeed they are in all respectable museums except London, sighed Carnegie. Now, the joke, of course, is that he was Scottish, and the rivalry between the Scots and the London. And London was the center of all evil. It was the center of sin, you see, to a Scotsman born in Dunfermline, the 1,200 population, or whatever it was, 2,000, I've been there. And so the unclothed figure, oh, it was just lewd automatically because it was. So that's the cablegram that did in those days. I have a copy of that cablegram when I did a presentation right for the 100th anniversary of the founding, and we had an actor playing Carnegie and all, and he read that line, and we had a packed audience in the music hall. It must have had 1,500 people, and they just roared. And when we rehearsed it, I said to this actor, it was simply marvelous. And you're going to, like you say to a comedian in a play, you're going to pause here because you're going to get a laugh here. He says, really? I said, yes, you will. And he paused, and it was a heck of a laugh. Because you can't hear the next line if you don't
hear
it. So anyway, that's how we heard about it. And you heard the story of how it got here.
Yeah.
And you know how we use the collection.
Oh, here's something I've been wondering about. You had spoken to me about all of the film footage, the movies, the home movies that your father took when you were traveling.
Well, that is all now at the Pittsburgh Filmmakers, which is, I guess, the number one, it's close to the number one filmmaking training center in the country. It's run by a great nephew of mine named Charlie Humphrey, who's a ball of fire, basket of energy. And he looked at a closet at my house one day on request, and there were hundreds.
I remember you.
And he rolled his eyes, and I said, I will have these all delivered to you, because among his programs he has slave labor, because you can get your degree there now in connection with a couple of the local universities. And you know, it's like the intern in the medical world. It's kind of semi-slave labor. You work your 80 hours a week and you get $100 a month. And but the brave man said, send it and I'll start through it. And he has it and he's starting through it. And I had a call here just a couple of days ago saying that he had started, and I guess at some point this winter I will stop in and see how far he's gotten. But it's got a little bit of everything, and I'm sure it's got me in short pants sliding down a slide or on a swing, you know, that kind of stuff.
Well, I mean, there are two things here. One is that images of you and your family that are casual, it could be turned into images that we could have in our archives.
Sure.
We would be interested in that. Your father, you, your family, your mother, your brothers. And secondly, the visit to the Pasteur Institute and any footage inside your father's workplaces, things that would be images like that. Do you remember if he took a photograph of the laboratory in the Pasteur Institute, for instance? That would be incredible to have for our archives. Those are the types of things
I don't recollect either my taking pictures inside the laboratory.
But
when
you
we
did
went
a,
through it
of mice
with our little guide, who was
yes.
a little old man. My brother was 4 years older, Ben, because he had the original tiny little 8mm booby camera made by Kodak, which could get into a pocket. It was a pretty good sized pocket. But the speed of the film would be such that I would be very doubtful if you could take anything inside. You need an awful lot of light.
Yes, you're right.
It was color film and you wouldn't have the speed for
yes.
film.
Yes.
Now, he did take and you have a copy of it. He did take a movie of Joseph Meister outside when we went to leave.
Right.
Standing at the gate, and we took one frame.
Out of that. And made that
frame made that print.
Right. But that print
And that print was taken outside at the gate.
Yes.
At which he later shot himself.
Right.
In probably 1936.
Right.
I believe that was all. I don't think he was taken inside. Now, the Pasteur Institute, which is, by the way, the way you pronounce it, it's pronounced just exactly as in stir your coffee, because it's French. Pasteur Institute in Paris, where I was a couple years ago, has a lot of prints of the lab as it was when he worked there. You know, mm-hmm. he died in 1890 or something. This is quite newer. This is, I mean, a whole lot newer than the alchemists.
This
is up to fairly recently. They left the labs as they were.
I remember you telling me that.
They have now changed that, and they have all his glassware and whatnot in a mini museum in cases, big glass cases, many, many, many of them, glass shelves. And you can spend couple hours in there looking at these things. And they have photographs of a lot of that stuff, and they have photographs of the labs as they originally were when he died, or shortly thereafter, because they kept them that way for a long time. And there is a lot of space in an adjunct building that is not currently used research medical laboratories for records, documents, books, correspondence, everything. And that place is just crawling with opportunities to get stuff on Pasteur. That's all they do.
Which I think that we would be interested in, but in the context of what I'm speaking of, I'm interested in what is related to you and your father, and any kind of imagery, film footage that, you know, you would want to give to us.
I don't know what's in there. I doubt. It's going to be fascinating if this stuff that's at the filmmaker reveals the film from which the one frame. The reason I say astounding, because it seems to me that that one film on 8mm film, yeah. An 8mm film, which is,
but
it didn't get put back with all the other stuff. My guess is that once it got out, and we took it to somebody in town.
Because that's a
can you make a print of this?
That print, I think, is from something that was produced in a newspaper or a magazine, because it has a dot matrix. And so,
well, then the film may be gone, and the original was
may have left.
Now, the farthest back that I can go is that same picture, maybe with a dot matrix, or maybe not. Hung in the Pasteur Memorial, which is this mini little dining room, which was dimly lit for atmosphere, with walnut walls and stuff for atmosphere. And if I had had a strong light, I would have known, and also younger eyes, whether that was indeed clipped from something which had been printed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very possible it was printed, because it might have been reproduced in one of our magazines.
That's what it looks like, yeah.
Harry would know more about that than I.
Okay.
I would despair of thinking that we had the film.
Mm-hmm. I see what you're saying. Because
the 8mm film. I'm sure we have some that sent out to filmmakers.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Because that was a cutesy idea, a little camera that was so light you could almost put it in an overcoat pocket. And my brother Ben was a great photographer. He took a lot of pictures. He loved taking pictures. And a lot of family stuff is in there. Whether that particular film, because it had that historical little old man, is unlikely, because my guess would be that film would be found.
It would have been used.
Now, maybe, you know, maybe it may be that film is in this pile, which
that
is
would
a,
be nice.
Which is a station wagon load full of stuff.
We'll keep our fingers crossed.
But and what we had in the museum was a cut from a publication.
But equally, I mean, I'm interested in that, but I'm also interested in some more candid shots of your father.
Yeah.
That
I
would
don't
be
know.
Fantastic.
I can't answer that.
Right.
And I'm going to go this winter out to Charlie and
we'll just keep it in mind.
Go through what we got out there and keep this in mind when I see there. Now, a lot of that stuff would be my family. My family. When I was first married in 53.
Not
Dad's
family,
your phone.
Yes.
But it's a mixture.
Okay.
A lot of still stuff, to a lot of 35mm.
We'll keep it in mind.
35mm camera became very, very popular with a very inexpensive camera called the Argus. Was 35mm camera, $20 or something. And it just sold like hotcakes. It was the successor to the original Kodak Brownie. But it was for 35mm film, so you crank it up and you get 36 exposures
right.
on it.
Right.
And the grain got closer, so you could get a lot of detail on a small film.
Yeah.
And that was. Brother Ben had a dark room in the house and developed a lot of his own pictures. Off the laundry. The laundry in the cellar was a big old house, and it was a tiny little grubby room. I don't know what the world was ever built for.
Well,
they had a little tiny sink in it. And he put tape on the walls and climb in there with the hypo and close the door, and the place smelled of.
Yeah, right.
And
Right.
The pictures, and you took a lot of pictures.
I was there.
You were there? You got old enough.
No, no, no.
You did that.
We did this in our parents' basement.
Did you?
Took your friends to read.
Your iPhone, remember the iPhone?
Yeah.
My husband's a photographer and does black and white photography. Greg does.
Do you still have anything you have?
Yeah, we have a dark room on the third floor.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I can remember being in there with him, much younger and smaller, and getting it squeezed together. A little tiny red bulb goes the door, and then he opened the phone and dunked it.
Right. Right.
And then at some point, you know, you put it in the tray and put a stick with the stick and hoop it around and then get it up and get it in the hypo. And it's about as far from the digital camera as you can get.
Yeah. No kidding.
Oh. And my wife still teaches the kids how to do black and white photography with an enlarger.
Does she? Is that what she teaches?
You will see at the Canadian Museum of Art. We have right now a simply fabulous black and white collection being shown by called Dream Street, which is the name of the street, by Smith, the great American photographer.
We saw that on the website, and we were looking forward to seeing it.
Oh, it's a fabulous picture. It's surprisingly small pictures, but that's you just stand a little closer.
Right.
And his eye for the moment and the angle are just superb. It's on display at the museum, and before I forget it, I got a couple passes for you.
Oh.
There's no point in paying admission.
Oh. Are these in the tray? There's two in the
tray. Oh, here they are.
Yeah, good for you. Take
thank
those.
You.
Oh,
thank you. Really kind of you.
Take those, because, by the way, that's a joint admission. We won't have time, but he one admission lets you in both the Museum of Natural History and the Museum of Art, and you have reason to want to go to one or the other. But there's one admission because people wander between them in this building. There's no possible way to do even have, for other reasons we do it, a clicker count.
Oh, yes.
But that same person may walk back out again and go to the other museum and so forth. I'm sorry about this. Fisher?
No problem.
Hello? Can't talk to you, J-Bo. Where are you? Okay, give me your number. How long are you going to be there? Give me the number again. Got it? 581. Gotcha. Pardon. What else could I tell you?
I
think your record, I hope your record takes proper cognizance of the part that Paul Montrone played in bringing about what the Chemical Heritage Foundation has. That he was absolutely key, because he didn't really, and this is perfectly understandable, didn't really know what he had.
Right.
He was still trying to find out what he had in the company, never mind about this oddball collection. It wasn't his cup of tea. He wasn't part of it from way, way back. The fact that he was born and raised in Philadelphia helps. Because he was...
I didn't know that.
Well, you do now.
Well, thank you.
But it helps because it was sort of bringing it home to his hometown, but through a long period of education, if you will, he began to understand what he had, and so many things could have happened to it that didn't.
Yeah.
We had one close call after the other.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And
you were working
Arnold
for
and I
years.
Worked hand in glove. I mean, Arnold and I talked every week for months. We talked every week about how to teach Paul what we had and what it was and where it ought to go and why it should be kept together and why it should go to Philadelphia and why the company should give it, and just on and on and on and on. And I would write to Paul and he would write to Paul, and then he would We did all kinds of things, including when you did those extensive renovations at your place of business in Philly. We built the gallery before we had the collection. I say we as if I was part of it. But I mean,
I know that.
And we did. And then I went over there on several occasions and took pictures of the work in progress.
Yeah.
I think three occasions.
Yeah.
And then I would send the pictures to Paul and tell him I just got back to Philadelphia and our project, is coming along nicely. And, you know, and here was Paul and the house this guy talking about it. And we haven't decided to we're going to do this with the pictures. But the more we did that, the more he began to building this.
Oh,
extensive renovation. Some of it wasn't for the museum, but for the collection. And finally, we got right down to the point of decision. It was very, very close. And I called him and made... I had been in his office and made the pitch, which he was astounded. I mean, he was just taken back. And he had a couple of his assistants there, and they, of course, went and... And he made a nod, which meant, check this out from a tax point of view. You know, one of the things any executive would.
Mm-hmm.
And they did.
Mm-hmm.
And so finally we got right down to the final. And I called him and I said, now, you know, Paul, we've got to make a decision on this. And I had written him and I said, we want that collection and we want $100,000 to clean it and reframe it and hang it. I've sort of been in fundraising for... I don't know, half a century. And I've learned that if you're going to give A, you don't mind giving B. If you're going to give a dormitory, and I sold a lot of them for school, then you wouldn't mind endowing it. You wouldn't want that dorm to get ready, would you, Dr. Jones? So I said, give me the collection. Give them the collection. And $100,000. And it was a long pause. He'd obviously thought about it. And he said, well, Jim, I'll tell you what. If we come up with the collection and $100,000, it seems to me appropriate that the Fisher family should come up with $100,000 too. Doesn't that seem to make sense? Well, of course, what are you going to say? No, it doesn't make sense. But you can tell why he's the chief executive officer.
Yes, that was very good.
And I was ready for it.
Very good.
And I said, Paul, I believe that that can be done. I believe that can be done. So sit tight. He said, all right, I'll sit tight. Well, the family has what amounts to a foundation. It's actually a fund within the Pittsburgh Foundation, which is a catch-all. It has 800 funds in it. But one of those is the Fisher Fund. So I went to the Fisher Fund, which I was then chairman. Now it's New Generation. And told the whole story. And Dad established the foundation. So I was on firm grounds. He did that at the advice of older brother Aiken, who was always the long-sighted one. Except for the fact that he didn't get the collection out of the company sale. He could have done that. It wouldn't have made any difference to Allied at all. They didn't know what they had. So I went to that, and it was easy. It was an easy sell.
Wow.
So we got the 100.
Wow.
And I called Paul, and rather than let him forget what he had done, I interpreted his conversation with me as an absolute promise. I'll give you A if you give me B. He didn't quite say that, but he... And I said, Paul, we've met your match. The deal is done. And there was a pause, and he realized that. I said, I got the 100 to match your 100, and we'll arrange. You'll be hearing from Arnold and his gang and so forth. And then we had a couple more words, and that was the end of it.
Wonderful.
He kind of hung up and wondered, what have I done? Because I think that was the way to do it. You know, I didn't want him to deliberate and talk to his accountant some more and talk to his lawyers some more and talk to anybody and let John Pavlik, who is the curator here, talk. Because John's heartbroken that he lost this. And he had him in the office in this place halfway to the airport, and they had about 3 visitors a year to see it, compared to where you guys are. It's just a way out of the way. The company headquarters is in New Hampshire, you know.
I know.
It's not there. Well, it's divided. One division is here.
We still have a good relationship with Fisher Scientific International. We're working with them on a 100-year anniversary exhibit, I understand.
Great.
I think that they're still very close to them. Hope to go back to them for more support.
Well, that's good. I'm delighted you are. And, of course, you have the 100th anniversary of the company coming up, which is 1902. And I'm going to find for you. I think we're through with the tape. What else can I give you on the tape?
I think we might be through with the tape. I have some show and tell for you, though.
Uh-huh. I have something I'm digging for, but we need to use tape time for that.
Okay.
I've got too many pots going at once.
Yeah. Well, you want to turn the tape off?
Yeah, we'll turn it off. We'll turn the tape off.